Welcome to PRN's Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. My guest today is Denny Rancourt. Denny is a distinguished tenured professor of physics. He's a recognized expert in his field. He's an environmental science researcher and expert. He was at the University of Ottawa, Canada. He's been on this program many times before. He was ruthlessly targeted for his activism, for supporting right over wrong. He's going through a protracted legal battle. Denny, I haven't kept up with what's been going on with you. I've had my own issues to deal with, not legal issues, but I'm a little behind the curve on everything that you've been going through in recent weeks. And I wanted to spend a good part of this program letting you bring me and my listeners up to date on just what's been happening. And I sure hope you have some good news.
Well, Stephen, I'd be happy to do that, and I'm really happy to be back on your show, and I'm happy that you're through some difficult times that you've just been having. I'm really pleased with that. And let me tell you how do I summarize this. I mean, your listeners know that I was fired with a false pretext from my tenured full professorship at the University of Ottawa. That was back in 2009. That went through a huge legal battle of it in its own right, and I lost the appeal on that. They had a team of lawyers. My union supported me very strongly, but the pretext that they had made up, the arbitrator went with it. And so that is now being appealed by my union. So that is under appeal. It's gone to what is called judicial review, and that will take another number of years. So that's been a long battle, but it's ongoing. My union continues to support me. They made a public statement that this was an egregious violation of academic freedom, and that they would, this is the first time in the union's history that they go to appeal over an individual grievance like mine. So that's good news, and we'll see what comes of that. But in the meantime, in the middle of all this, the same employer, the University of Ottawa, funded a huge defamation lawsuit against me. They have spent well over $1 million suing me for defamation for some comments I made about a law professor at the University of Ottawa, where I was critical of this professor, and it was based on documents that were public and so on. And so that went to trial. That was it took almost 4 years to get the trial, 3.5 years to get the trial. The trial just ended this summer. The trial ended in June of 2014. During the trial, I made a motion for the judge to recuse himself because he had obtained all of his professional and graduate degrees from the University of Ottawa, and also he was a regular annual donor to the University of Ottawa. So I made a motion asking the judge to recuse himself. He refused to recuse himself, and so we continued with the trial. It was a jury trial. And then as I was making my opening statement to the jury, the judge interrupted me and on the spot, off the cuff, barred me from making a defense that I had planned on making that was in my statement of defense. It was not news to anyone. I started explaining that defense to the jury. It was a defense whereby in the common law, if there is no actual damages to the reputation of the person that you are alleged to have defamed, then you can argue that the whole lawsuit itself is an abuse of process. And the case in the UK that went all the way to appeal, it was a case by the name of Jameel. So we've referred to it as the Jameel defense. It's really a remedy regarding abuse of process in the courts. Well, the judge just said, listen, I may be making an error of law, but I'm going to bar that. You're not allowed to tell the jury about this. Okay? Now, that was just shocking. I was overwhelmed. I mean, I had planned to make this defense, and in addition to my so-called fair comment defense, where I was saying, well, this is an opinion. It's not a statement of fact. It's clearly an opinion. Therefore, that's protected under fair comment law. And but in addition, I had this Jameel defense, which was barred. So the rug was pulled from under my feet during the trial. And that was so egregious that Cynthia McKinney decided to start a petition demanding that I be given a fair trial, demanding that this judge be removed and that they start again and not arbitrarily bar my defenses. And that petition was highly successful. It made the mainstream media news. It gathered more than 1,000 signatures. It's still available to be signed at change.org. There's a petition by Cynthia McKinney there that is to give me a fair trial. I'm sure your listeners can find it if they want to sign it. That petition occurred during the trial. And during the trial, I was also interviewed by the mainstream media regarding, the petition was started after, after this event in the trial, I decided to walk out of the trial. I told the court that I could not participate and make it appear like I thought I was getting justice in a process like this that would just arbitrarily bar my defenses at the start of the trial. So I walked out. It was after I walked out that Cynthia started this petition, and at the same time, the media became interested in this. And so I told the media why I walked out, and I used the term kangaroo court, and I complained. I stated I had asked the judge to recuse himself because of reasonable apprehension of bias and so on. This all went into the media, and this very much upset the judge. So what the judge did, he said several things in open court while I was absent, to the effect that he was didn't like what I was doing outside of the court. And so when I came back to the courtroom after the jury had gone away to make its decision, I came back for the jury's verdict and for some motions at the end of the trial. When I came back, the judge told me that he was citing me, he was charging me in contempt of court. And this was a criminal contempt of court. And the judge said in open court that I had better get a lawyer because there was a chance I was going to jail over this. And so this was said to me at the end of the trial, before the end of the trial. And the judge actually set a date where there would be a hearing that could put me in jail. And so the date was set for September 25th. And I was, of course, very shocked by all of this. And at the same time, I had to... Now, the jury... Now, this is the crazy thing. In addition to that, when the judge, in my absence, made his charge to the jury, he told the jury that they were to receive all the evidence that the plaintiff had given during the trial, but that they were not allowed to consider that I had any defense. So he barred even my fair comment defense from even being considered by the jury. So it's the opposite of a fair trial. You're alleged to have defamed someone. The other person gets to explain all the reasons why they believe they've been defamed. And then the judge tells the jury, now you've heard all that, and you're not allowed to consider that this man had a right to express his opinion, that there was a fair comment defense. There are no defenses for you to consider.
Denny, it's hard to believe that any nation calling itself a democracy would operate this way, but this is the way it goes on in America, this is the way it goes on in Canada, and I imagine it goes on the same way in many countries across Europe, and certainly any country that does this has no right to call itself a democracy. It's a police state, plain and simple.
Well, this is outrageous. So the judge bars me from having any defense. It's like they're tying my hands behind my back. They're saying to the jury, look at this man, now find him guilty, okay? And then following that, he tells me, and because of the fact that you were talking to journalists and this petition we're blaming on you as well, because of these things, that was criminal contempt of court. You could go to jail, and we'll see you at the hearing. Goodbye, sir, okay? That's how the trial went. Unbelievable. So I still to this day believe that my criticism was completely valid in the sense that it was a valid opinion based on facts. And it was using the harsh words that I believed needed to be used. So that's a situation regarding freedom of expression in Canada, in Ontario. Now the trial's over, I try to appeal. And so I did file an appeal. I will appeal on the grounds that the judge was biased, there was a clear appearance of bias, and on the grounds that I was not allowed a defense, and on the grounds that I was taken, that I was barred from an entire defense before it even started, all of these are now my grounds for appeal. And I file the appeal, but then I find out that in order to be allowed to go to appeal, you have to have a complete transcript of everything that was said in during trial. That transcript, I'm told by the court services, is going to cost some $15,000. In the meantime, they have ordered damages and costs against me, which to date, now they've, if you sum it all up, the unpaid amounts that are ordered against me is over $1 million. So they, and this is, the great majority of that is so-called court costs of the other side. So even though the university was funding this lawsuit using public money, the court is ordering me to pay the university back for this outrageous lawsuit that it did against me. And the lawyers are saying, well, this is how much it's worth. And the court is saying, well, fine, then he has to pay that. It's over $1 million. So it's clearly much, much more than my total value, which is nil at the moment. There is no way I can ever physically pay that kind of money. Absolutely no way. And in that situation, which makes me completely bankrupt, I'm expected to have some hard, real cash to pay for these court transcripts if I even want to get into the door to have the appeal, which I think the appeal is very important because I think we need to take it to a higher level to either get justice or further expose how bad the court system is. Either way, we've got to go to appeal. So that's the situation. And, well, that's the reason that I have a funding campaign as well. I'm trying to collect enough money to pay for those transcripts, so I'm asking people to give some money. There was already, during the summer, an Indiegogo campaign which had some success, which managed to get close to just over $6,000. And so we're still a ways from the minimum that I would need in order to just buy the transcripts. Now, that's my financial situation right there.
Denny, this program has helped you raise money in the past. Tell listeners what they can do to support you. And any amount is yeah. important, and it'll help you. It's not to pay lawyers' bills. It's to do things like pay for transcripts to help you in your justifiable defense.
That's right. I will not be giving any money to lawyers. I mean, if it turns out the public is super generous, I may give a partial amount to a lawyer who's willing to act predominantly in a pro bono fashion, but who needs money for his expenses and so on. I may do that, you know, in the best of cases if the campaign has more success than it's been having now. But it's predominantly to pay the court expenses. That's right, the filing costs and the transcripts and all of that. But if you you could Google my name, Denis, that's like Dennis with one N, and then Rancourt, and that will take you to my blogs, and all my blogs have a donate button on them, a PayPal button. For example, one of my blogs, I guess the main blog with my essays about social activism and social commentary, is called Activist Teacher, activistteacher.blogspot.ca or .com. That has a donate button right on the front page. So all my main blogs have the donate button on them for my legal defense fund, and there's also links to a page that explains the campaign. The Indiegogo site is still up, but the campaign is closed because they have a deadline, and so that's closed. But you can still go there on the Indiegogo site and see the wonderful little films that were made by people who put that campaign together, and the background documents and things like that. It's a very, very nicely put together campaign site. So the Indiegogo gives you the story and why it's important to fund this, and then you can find the PayPal button on any one of my blogs. So at the Activist Teacher blog or the U of O Watch blog or the Climate Guy blog, but the most common blogs that are people associate with me is Activist Teacher and U of O Watch. So I'm sure people could find me easily enough on the web. I mean, when you do a Google search, you get the Wikipedia page and you get my websites. And, for example, on the academicfreedom.ca website, there is a top-level menu that says donate, and that takes you to the page that explains why that's important and so on. So it's easy enough to find. You can also, I mean, your listeners should know that I also write social theory and social analysis essays, and I was very active during the recent massacre in Gaza. So I'm a columnist at Veterans Today, and so if they go to the veteranstoday.com website and look at the columnist and click my name, Denis Benport, they'll get all the articles that I published on that site. And more of my essays are published on the Dissident Voice website. So that's dissidentvoice.org. If you look at the authors there, or if you do a search of my name, you'll get a great number of essays about various topics that I have written. Just to give you some recent titles, I wrote one called Israel-U.S. Interrupts Slaughter in Gaza to Press Forward with Genocide. Another one is called Israel's Attempted Genocide Must Fail, Lessons from Genocide in Canada, and so on. There's one called The Intended Roles of the Israel Lobby and of Israel in the U.S. Empire and incompatible with peace. So there's a number of essays like that. I wrote one that's very popular that has been reposted on some major sites and that is in many places, that argues in detail how much minimal reparations are due to black Americans, descendants of slaves, of black slaves in America. And so I did a very rigorous economic calculation of how much you would need to give in reparation to the descendants, and argued that in detail. And so that one's called Calculated Minimum Reparation Due to Slave Descendants, 1.5 million to each black citizen of the USA. Mm-hmm. And so that generated a lot of discussion because, a lot of people will say, well, why would we give that kind of money? Well, if you read the essay, it's pretty clear on the fact that that would be, first of all, it's a correct minimal amount that is due in terms of justice, but also it's certainly morally required and justified, and so on. You know, there's essays there about my pedagogy, how to teach physics, what I was doing in the classroom, my activism, some social theory about medicine and the human metabolism in relation to chronic pain, and how powerful dominance hierarchies have an effect on you through the mechanism of the stress that imposes on you, and how that directly, according to scientific studies that are quite rigorous, affects your metabolism and therefore your health, that keeps you weak and keeps you from resisting and keeps you in a position of being oppressed. So there's that biological mechanism that I've explained, and so on. I wrote a book that people can find. It's called Hierarchy and Free Expression in the Fight Against Racism, with an introduction by Mahdi, whom you know. Mahdi Darius Nazim Roya wrote the introduction to that book. So that book is easy to find on the internet as well, if you Google for the title, or once you find me, there's descriptions of the little bios everywhere, and they mention that book with a link. So that book was very favorably reviewed by many important social commentators in the U.S. So I was very pleased about that, and I was pleased, I'm talking, Stephen, but I was pleased when the book came out, which is a fairly new book, 2013. I wrote it in the middle of this craziness of the legal battles, and there was a graduate student who contacted me, who got a hold of this book, and who wanted to tell me personally how the book had changed her entire professional outlook, and how it caused her to change her graduate program her thesis topic and so on. So I was that was the biggest compliment anyone could give me about the book. So that in a nutshell is what I've been up to and a bit of who I am for listeners who don't know. But that's what it's about. And I've also been very concerned about current events. I've been following some of your writings, Stephen, and I've certainly been concerned about the same issues in Ukraine and Israel and Palestine, Gaza, Syria.
Benny, I want to get into that during the program, but I wanted to mention this as well. I know several people like yourself who have been terribly abused by a system that should treat people like you, who I call some of society's best. You should be treated much better. Yesterday was a special day for me. I've written many, many articles, at least 24 or more, on Lynn Stewart and the ordeal that she endured. She's been home free for the past 8 months or so. And Lynn and her husband contacted me. They were in Chicago. We got together on Saturday. We spent time together. It was a wonderful, wonderful occasion. Lynn spent over 4.5 years in prison, as I like to put it, for doing the right thing. So she was grossly abused. You've been grossly abused. Larry Pinckney has been a guest on this program. He'll certainly be back. The system grossly abused him. People are abused for their activism, for supporting right over wrong, for getting in the face of injustice and doing something about it. Well, it was a wonderful discussion with Lynn and her husband, Ralph Pointer. Ralph, also an activist for justice, and it was marvelous getting together with them. And I decided I wanted to write something about it. So today I'm writing an article I simply call Lunch with Lynn and Ralph, and I review what happened to Lynn. I mentioned a little bit about Ralph's activism and brought it up to date without getting together at a hotel in Chicago where they came in. They were invited to be part of a National Lawyers Guild convention. It ran from the 3rd of September through today, and I believe Lynn was asked to speak last night. She's 75 years old. They kept her in prison, Denny, long enough to believe that when they finally gave her the compassionate release she deserved, according to U.S. law, at most she'd have a few months, maybe just a few weeks to live. She got out and came home Christmas Eve a little over 8 months ago. She defied the system. She beat the odds. She's lived longer than the 6 months they gave her, many months before they released her. And we drank a toast together, and I wished her a long life and good vigor for the kind of a miracle that I really felt that I got, Denny, because of the depths of my situation, I wondered if I'd ever see my home again. Somehow I came back from that, and there was a movie I remember from, the 1950s, 1960s, sometime around that time frame. It was a story about Rocky Graziano, the boxer, and it was called Somebody Up There Likes Me. And when I walked in my front door, I really felt somebody up there liked me and let me come home.
Well, you know, Stephen, that is a beautiful story about Lynn and Ralph. And also I want to say that, you know, when I read some of your essays after you came back from that incredible ordeal, I was so impressed. I thought, oh, my God, this is a new, renewed, refreshed, and even sharper, Stephen, than previously. You know, I thought there's something special. There's more spark than there was. Although your writings are fantastic and your style is amazing, I just felt that there was something more to it. Is it just me, or was it my hoping that you'd really gotten better, or did you feel?
I was worried. I was worried because I went 2 months offline. Aside from the struggle to regain my health, the thing that bothered me so much was being unable to do what I love best, my writing, my media work, and you get used to something. You know, you get used to get something you love, and then you get off it, and you get used to the daily grind of the nightmare of rehab, where the most exciting thing to look forward to during the day is the next meal, Denny. And you can either watch rotten television in the interim or stare at the walls and ceiling and I absolutely deplored that. But I wondered if I lost my touch. I said, well, if I get home again, will I be able to get back in the groove again? Will I be
right.
able to get back into my writing and write the way I did before? And I honest to goodness wasn't sure, but I knew what I was going to write about in my first article. I called it Back from the Abyss. I felt I owed my readers and my friends and my colleagues an explanation of what happened, because I was offline. I had no email addresses. I had no computer. I couldn't tell anybody. Only a few people knew. So I concentrated on a brief explanation of that. And then
yeah.
I went into discussing some of the things I would have written about had I been around to do it. And I took off from there, beginning with one article a day and then going back to my standard two articles a day. And a few days, Danny, over the past little over a month now, I wrote three articles in a day. I was back in the groove, Danny. I was really
oh, yeah.
scared that I may have lost it.
Oh, there's no way. You have not lost it. I have a strong sense that this has enriched you. It's made you stronger.
In a way, it really has, because I went through an experience I never could understand without going through it myself. I said to Lynn yesterday, there is no one who can understand what it's like to be in prison if they haven't been there themselves. You can read about it. You can study it. You can write
yeah.
about it the way I do all the time, and I can't possibly comprehend what she went through. My mother was in a nursing home. I was always uneasy about where she was, even though it was a good nursing home. But every time I left, I just felt uneasy about what was going on. But I couldn't comprehend exactly what it was like until I went through the equivalent of it. The facility I was in was a combination nursing home rehab facility, and I was in the rehab part of it. But it was really like a nursing home, and I called it nightmarish. When I got out, Denny, it felt like getting out of prison. But I never could understand that without going through it, and I
yeah.
just hope I never see a facility like that again. And if I had to spend the rest of my life in one, I would honestly rather be dead.
Oh my! But you have medical insurance, I presume.
It doesn't
I
cover
hope.
Nursing homes.
uh-huh.
It covered my rehab up to a certain amount.
Yeah.
I would have been covered through around late September, and then my Medicare would cut off. It began the 4th of June. It would have covered me 2 weeks of hospitalization. I think around the 18th of June through the end of September, it would have covered that, and then I was on my own. But if I had to go into a nursing home, long care, strictly on my own, I have to pay for it or it's tough. Now, if you're destitute, they'll do something for you, but they can put you in a snake pit.
Yeah,
I was in a decent facility, and I thought it was nightmarish. Just imagine what a snake pit is like.
Right. Oh, my.
They just dump you there and leave you there and do nothing. And that really is like being in prison.
Yeah, so it made you closer to Lynn as well. I mean, what happened to Lynn? 70-plus years old, 4.5 years in jail. For what? For a press communication where they said that she had was basically a way for her, for the accused to communicate, some crazy thing like that.
He made that one
lawyer,
up out of
a lawyer,
Denny. Ramsey Clark, he was on Ramsey Clark's defense
yeah.
team. Ramsey Clark, a former U.S. Attorney General. Ramsey Clark did exactly the same thing Lynn did, and they didn't lay a glove on him. What they went after Lynn for was a combination of things. 30
yeah.
years of human rights activism supporting the kinds of clients Washington wanted to convict. And second, specifically, being part of Ramsey Clark's defense team, supporting an innocent man, Sheikh Abdul Rahman, irresponsibly accused of the first 1993 World Trade Tower attack and other attacks on U.S. soil. He was completely innocent. There was no evidence whatever linking him to the crimes he was charged with, and yet he was convicted. Ramsey Clark asked Lynn to join his appeals team. Lynn did, even though she was very busy, and at the time she said, who can turn down Ramsey Clark? So she did it, and she ended up being charged herself irresponsibly, sentenced initially to 28 months in prison. She appealed. A three-judge appeals panel said the sentence was too lenient. They referred her back to district court. A Judge Kotel upped her sentence to 10 years. She served a little over 4 years, and finally she was released on compassionate release after originally being turned down on the same request. But she did get out, and she came home New Year's Eve, this past New Year's Eve.
Yeah, it's insane. It's more than, it's criminal. It's so disgusting. You can't imagine a worse regime. When I say regime, I mean one that pretends to have courts and judges and so on, you know. It's just incredible. And they go after you and they get you. If you cross some line in their books, that's it. You're done.
Denny, in your case, it shows if they want to get you, they'll get you one way or another. You can even beat them in court, but they'll come up with something else. They'll keep you back in court. They'll bankrupt you. They'll put you deeply into debt. They have limitless resources.
I mentioned the hearing to put me in jail that was to be September 25th. Well, I got a court decision that was canceled. I managed to get that.
Thank heavens for that.
That's not happening. And, I started looking at the law of contempt of court and criminal contempt of court, and I realized that the judge had not followed the law and that he was doing stuff that he should not have been doing in terms of charging me with this. And so I was getting ready to defend myself, and I wrote a letter to the judge, and I said, well, what are you doing? This is an important hearing. I have to know what's going to happen. I'm getting ready to defend myself. And the next day, he put out a decision that he had, on his own, looked at the law and decided that he was going to cancel the hearing. It wasn't even proper the way he did it.
He was intimidating you.
Yeah, it's pure intimidation and talk of jail, pure intimidation. And the other side was, pushing him on, asking for this, and that's where they were going. But it was it was not even proper. It was, I could go into the details of the law, but there's just no way that he should have done what he did. He charged me with this criminal contempt without ever having told me what in detail the charge was, what exactly I had done that was against the law, or to stop it if he felt that it was damaging the process in any way, to even stop it. One of the things he talked about was the fact that I'd given an interview to the journalist, who then published what I'd said in the newspaper. Well, the journalist had gone to court and asked the judge, can I interview this man? And he had said, oh, yes, no problem. He can say what he wants. And then when I show up in court, he says, well, look at, this is part of the reason you gave that interview and so on. The other side was going, and he said this was a kangaroo court, Your Honor, and et cetera, et cetera. Well, in the end, they had to cancel it. That would have been just too much.
But you never know what they would, what they can and what they would do, Denny.
No.
If they decided they wanted to. When they want to go after somebody and get you, they're going to get you any way they have to do it. And they can run you around in circles. And again, if nothing else, they can bankrupt you. They put you deeply into debt. They've given you an impossible situation. They've tied you up in court for many years. They've made you lose one decision after another. And they can keep this thing going forever if they want to.
Yes. Well, they're trying to guess. They're doing this at the local level in Ottawa. It's the Ontario Court. And they're trying to guess, well, how much of our stuff will the Court of Appeal be able to support? And is there any chance, given that this is in the media and that he has supporters and so on, that some of this could be overturned? And do we have to be careful here? So when they judge that they can just plow ahead, that there are no supporters and that nobody will care, then they do. They just plow ahead, and they judge that the Court of Appeal will go along with it. And this has happened to me in the past. But when they judge that, maybe going this far and, clearly violating the law of contempt in this way, maybe that won't quite fly. And there's a chance he might actually get a lawyer, a pro bono lawyer to support him. So let's back off a bit. That's how I understand their thinking. It's only an other element of the establishment that can come and balance the forces here, or of public opinion, or something like that. You know, if the mainstream media sides with you for a couple of articles, or a journalist decides to research it a little more and actually write it accordingly, and the editor can't cut it completely to pieces, then you know, there's some danger there. And so this is the calculation, as I see it, in their minds, which they do constantly and rapidly, even not consciously sometimes, I think. But this is what they're looking at. Terrible. It's
maybe
terrible.
He decided he went a little bit too far, and he could nail you on so much else. He could nail you with so much injustice that he pulled back from this one. But
yeah.
If he didn't think he had enough of other things to nail you with, he might have stuck with this, even if he knew he couldn't beat you for it. But again, he could run you around in circles and cause you great, great grief.
Yeah. Well, I haven't even had this. I've just been so busy with this order to cancel the contempt charge, and with the orders on costs of the trial. I mean, the submissions from both parties, one after the other, were just remarkable. You know, there's so much stuff. I'm going to be blogging about it on my blog, UFOWatch.blogspot.com, but just putting it together now, you know. I can hear the theme music coming
on.
Yeah,
we're going to take a short break, run a few promos, Danny. Hold your thought. Let's do that, and we'll come right back.
Okay.
Welcome back on with Danny Rancourt, discussing his ordeal, discussing Lynn Stewart, who I spent time with yesterday. Danny, let me just give you and listeners a little update on Lynn's health situation. It was very, very grave. She was a breast cancer survivor, but it reoccurred during prison. You can imagine the abysmal medical treatment that you get when you're incarcerated, and indeed that's true. It's delayed. It's inadequate. They go out of their way to do less rather than more. Instead of treating people the way they should be treated, they deny them, they delay them, they cause them all kinds of grief. Well, Lynn was finally put on some pretty intensive chemotherapy, and the good news, at least hopefully the good news, was, in prison, she developed stage 4 cancer. It spread to multiple parts of her body, extremely serious. It's lethal if it isn't treated. If it is treated effectively, people with stage 4 can live for many years. But you've got to get the proper treatment. You've got to get it on time. It's got to be done properly. I have no idea how well it was done in prison, but she did get intensive chemotherapy. That part of the treatment is over. She's still taking medication. She said that most of the malignancies in her body, I forget exactly the way she put it. Maybe the best way to put it is to say they've gone back into remission, or at least close enough to it. There is still one malignancy remaining. It's around the lung area. The other malignancies were in her bones, in other parts of her body. So the chemo was very, very effective. Hopefully it'll stay that way. It's kept her alive for over 8 months. She's still taking treatment for the one malignancy that remains. But we drank a toast together for long life and vigor, and that Lynn could beat the odds and keep beating the odds. She's got so much living left to do, and I certainly hope that she will survive and be able to do it. She's 75. Her husband, Ralph, don't know exactly what his age is, but around the same number, if that's the best way to put it. I just reached my 80th birthday, so together we collectively probably put together about 200 years or so, something of that vicinity. But Lynn looked reasonably good. You could see that prison took a toll on her. She needed time to rest after we spent some time together, and then she was going to spend the evening at a banquet that was scheduled, and I believe she would be speaking. But overall, she looked, I wondered how she would look when I saw her, and I must say, she looked better than I feared. She really did look pretty good, even though she's aged, she looked a little tired. But that's the way I looked, too, when I went through my ordeal. But I think she's headed in the right direction, and with any kind of luck, just maybe she's going to beat this cancer altogether. And the 6 months she was given to live, maybe that will be another bad medical prediction. I certainly hope so.
Well, that's great news. I'm happy to hear that. Yeah, and the fact of being out of prison and the relief that you know from all that stress must really help your metabolism as well. Your immune system must get back to normal after. When you take away that stress from prison, that must
absolutely, Denny. In Lynn's words, she said something like, "What a relief! What a relief to be out of that place!" And that's exactly the way I felt. I wasn't in prison, but when I got out of where I was, I felt like I was getting out of prison. And I also felt what a relief to put my back to the side of the building that I was in. So I can just imagine the way Lynn felt getting out of prison and coming back to New York and arriving in LaGuardia to a joyous welcome by family, friends, and supporters. And I saw a video of that. It was marvelous.
Well, sometimes I feel that my being forced to defend myself legally, and I've been self-represented the whole time, is a bit like a prison, but it's nothing like a prison. I mean, because I feel empowered by it. I feel that I can make arguments, that I can show those arguments to journalists, to friends, to supporters. So it's nothing like a prison, but it's still very, very demanding. You know, most recently, coming back to my saga, the judge had to decide how much the trial cost the other side and how much I would be ordered to pay. And in the course of that argument, I gave the court an affidavit in which I said, listen, I have no money. I'm completely impecunious. And here's how many few dollars I have in my bank account. Here's the money I owe in my Visa card, and so on and so on. And I detailed it all out in an affidavit. Well, the other side said, well, we want to cross-examine him on that affidavit. So that's fine. We did an out-of-court cross-examination where they were able to go at me and ask me all the questions they wanted about whether or not I was truly impecunious. Well, before they even started the cross-examination, the first thing they did was to ask the judge to order me to answer all the questions ahead of time of the examination, to produce all the documents before we even sit down for the cross-examination, which is outrageous. The rules are to protect you against that kind of craziness. And so I said so. I said, look, that's just crazy, you know. And their argument was, well, other judges have done it with him before, so let's do it again, you know. And I managed to win that point, and I was didn't have to answer before the actual cross-examination. Then we went to cross-examination, and I gave them original documents from all my bank accounts, all the few savings I have. There's still one retirement savings plan that I hadn't cashed out in order to defend myself, which had just over $1,000 in it. So I showed them that. I showed them everything I had, and they still argued. Then they wrote their argument to the judge and said, he must be lying, and we want you to conclude that even though he's given all this evidence, because he didn't answer our most probing questions, like what in detail is every transaction you've ever made in the last 4 years on everything, which I thought was just going way too far in the sense that it would have been onerous, and in the sense that, you know, what's the point? It's not relevant. You've got exact documents that show how much I have in every possible source. You don't need to question about every detail of every transaction I've ever made. On everything, you know. So I said, no, you're going too far. And they could have, if they believed that they were right in their right to ask that many questions, they could have done what is called a refusals motion, which they didn't do. All they did was go to the judge and say, Your Honor, you see, he gave us this stuff, and here it is, but he didn't answer this million other questions that we asked him, and therefore, and all the documents I showed that everything in my affidavit was precise and accurate down to the penny. Didn't matter. Your Honor, we want you to conclude that he must be lying. In other words, that this is completely unreliable, what he's given us. Well, that's what the judge concluded. He said, no, I don't believe you. And I said in my submissions to the judge, I said, listen, you can't conclude that when during the trial you concluded the opposite, because during the trial we did a motion that they were arguing for a permanent injunction, that I be barred from ever talking about this case again in this way. And as part of their argument, they said, we need a permanent injunction because he won't be able to pay any of the things you order against him because he doesn't have the ability to pay. And the judge decided, that's right. There is no ability whatsoever. He's dreaming if he thinks he can ever pay this. There's no ability to pay costs, anything. And he ruled that during the trial. Then we argue how, whether or not I have to pay more costs. I prove again, for the second time, that I'm impecunious. And he rules the opposite of what he's already ruled. And he rules opposite to the evidence, accepting the argument that because I didn't answer a million other questions, that you couldn't rely on the documents and everything that I was showing. I mean, it's just crazy. So that's how they got the latest, almost $500,000 of costs ordered, even though I have no money. So the court goes ahead and orders these enormous amounts against you as an individual, knowing that there is no possibility of paying. That's how crazy it is. It's against fundamental justice, I would argue, to even do something like that, for the court to make orders that it knows cannot be followed, But that's the way it went. And it's just been one thing after another like that. So then I asked him to change his order because there were mistakes in it, all kinds of mistakes. And I wrote a long letter explaining in every detail everything that couldn't possibly be right about his so-called endorsement and how he was making statements that he was just pulling things out of a hat that had nothing to do with the evidence that was presented in court, that were not relevant to the matter of costs that was before him. And I asked him to, you can't just write this stuff like that. Well, he wouldn't hear of it. After I made all those arguments and he heard them all in writing, he ruled that this matter was no longer before him, so he couldn't consider what I was asking him. The Latin word for that is functus. And so he just ruled that he couldn't do anything. And then a few days later, the other side asked him to do something, and he ruled that he could do that. I mean, it's just crazy.
The system is rigged to support the powerful and go after the people the powerful want to take advantage of and exploit. And I must say, I'm reminded of a quote by Gandhi many, many years ago. I didn't hear him say it, but I certainly quoted him several times in articles that I wrote. When he was asked once what he thought of Western civilization, he thought it was a good idea.
Yeah, I know that one. That's great. That's right. It's a good idea. It would be a very good idea. And I certainly agree that it would be a good idea. Oh, God.
Well, countries like America and Canada and Britain and France and Germany, all NATO allies, NATO that I call a monster, a global killing machine, and these are the countries that have done more harm to more people over a longer period of time than the so-called tyrants of the world who may persecute their own, but they don't wage global wars on humanity, and that's certainly what U.S.-led NATO does, and Canada is a NATO member in good standing. So its judicial system is just as appalling as America's is, and there are political prisoners that infect Canada's prison system and America's prison system, and I call America's system a gulag, Denny. I imagine the same is true about Canada.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the aboriginals that are put in prison and that are treated just...
Awful. Just awful.
It's just... It's Oh, homeless is an understatement, you know. It's terrible what we do, how we are racist as a country towards the Aboriginal peoples. It's very, very disturbing.
And it's the same, of course, in America, and it goes back centuries. I don't know when it began in Canada, but in America, my goodness, I mean, it goes back to before Plymouth Rock. I don't know when it began, but it's a horrendous story that's absolutely buried in history. And if anybody reads one of the editions of Howard Zinn's A People's History of the United States, they'll get the true story, exactly what was done to America's native people. And it's the same in Canada, same thing.
It is. I mean, the Canadians developed a system of apartheid and extermination that was very, very well organized. And in fact, when South Africa wanted to learn how to do this, they came to Canada and observed and asked questions and looked at how it was done in Canada in order to implement it in South Africa. So Canadians have quite a history of being good at this.
Yeah, and another fact of history, Denny. Adolf Hitler, at least in some way, modeled his persecution of the Jews after the way America persecuted its native people, and he believed.
If I'm not mistaken, even the expression "the final solution" is a Canadian expression.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
In relation to Aboriginal people.
But I believe that Hitler said, if not in so many words, that if America could get away with exterminating its native people, how could they complain about what he planned to do to the Jews and the gypsies and the communists?
Modern Israelis say that routinely about the United States and North America. They actually say it expressly that, you know, you have no lessons to give us because look at how you've treated the Aboriginal peoples.
That's exactly right.
They actually use that as a pretext, you know.
And throughout the Americas, the native people were wiped out. Nobody knows the percentage that was wiped out, but it was probably in excess of 95% throughout the entire Americas. And the United States, I believe, had the biggest population. I think Brazil may have had the second biggest. I may be wrong on that. I'll take that back. I'm not certain about that. But Canada certainly had a large population. But the population existed throughout the Americas, and the genocide was throughout the hemisphere, where at least 90% of the native people were wiped out over hundreds of years. Talk about a crime against humanity.
Yeah. Well, Ward Churchill is one of the researchers who has written about that quite extensively. And done a lot of the, you know, who helped to make it known to us in today's thinking. And he's been in the news recently. Did you notice that?
No, I missed him in the news. What's going on with him?
Well, some crazy thing. Fox News decided to interview him and
bash him. Oh, my goodness.
And the reason they brought him back in was because of what's happening with ISIS, where they want to be able to go after someone who said that, well, you know, Americans deserve what they're getting. It's backlash, right? And so they're contrasting ISIS, and how could we possibly deserve that kind of radical extremism? And so who's the guy who even suggested that is well known? Well, they went and got him and interviewed him and tried to bash him, and did one of these spectacular things where they did that. I don't know how they think. It's crooked thinking, but it was nice to see Ward Churchill defend himself and see that he's...
Oh, he can do it, Denny. He can do it.
...in everything, right?
Oh, yeah. Indeed. I mean, he's a tough guy to go up against. I had him once on my program. It's been a good while. He certainly is an expert on American Indian affairs. He's written many books on it, and I've read a good many of them. And I'm amazed that Fox News had him on. But he absolutely could give at least as much as he would take, and probably a lot more.
Yeah. It's nice to see that. But it's so transparent how the U.S. treats its critics, its homegrown critics.
Oh, it really is.
You know, I include myself in that Canada is a satellite of the United States. But anyone who crosses that line, boy, the Israel lobby and the establishment, they just go after you and they take you out. And if it means going to prison, then it means going to prison. If completely taking away your profession and your calling and your network of support is not enough, then they will put you in prison.
Oh, they can do it, Danny. I'm really surprised that somehow over the years Canada wasn't made an American state. RT International this week, I think they run documentaries, and I think they repeat them for a week, and then they go on to a new documentary. They had a documentary on Hawaii and how America annexed Hawaii in 1893, and then in 1959 during the Eisenhower administration, it became the 50th state. I'm surprised that Canada, there hasn't been, that over the years, over the decades, over the generations, there wasn't a move made to make Canada an American state because of all the resources that Canada has. And that would certainly be of great value to America.
Well, I think the reason is it doesn't need to. It's taking, the U.S. is taking the resources.
It really is taking them.
But at will.
If you go back a few generations, I don't think it was quite the way it is today, Denny. So you go back to Hawaii, 1893 and then 1959, go back to Canada in that same time frame. I don't know to what extent the resources of Canada were known then, but it's more than just oil and gas. Canada is extremely water rich, and water is an extremely valuable resource. But today, Denny, as you say, America, you know, just waltzes in, and with American corporations coming in, really has control of what's going on anyway. So it doesn't need Canada to be the 51st state.
No, there's no longer any. I don't see any real distinction between English Canada and the United States.
I don't see a move made now. We are just about out of time. We didn't get to the other big events of the world, but I'll get you back, Denny, and we'll talk about them. We'll talk about anything new and what's going on with you, and we'll talk about the events that are going on. They're not going away. The things that I was writing about before I took ill are still going on, except the Gaza War, and I had my say on that. But the Ukraine thing is still going on. Obama launched another Iraq war. The Syrian war continues. It just goes on endlessly, and Canada is a part of it.
I also would like to call upon your listeners to consider giving some money to my legal defense fund. I need to get there in front of the Court of Appeals.
Quickly tell them where to go.
Strong arguments again. So
quickly, where to go to do that, Denny?
Well, if you Google my name, Denny, that's like Dennis with one N, Rancourt, Rancourt, you'll find my blogs, and all the blogs have a PayPal button very visible on the front page there.
It's simple as pie to do it, and I have to cut off Denny because they're going to cut me off. But it's simple as pie. Just Google Denny's last name, Rancourt. You go right to one of his two sites. You'll be able to do it. I urge you to support Denny. Support right, the battle of right over wrong. Thanks, Denny.
Thank you, Stephen. Bye-bye now.